for the record, Helsinki is the capital of Finland. Stockholm is the capital of Sweden.
That is correct. Who didn't know that?
No one.
Oh, everyone knew that.
I was out of the room when that occurred.
It's certainly nobody in this room was confused about that.
The funny thing is, if you type Helsinki syndrome into Wikipedia, it immediately sends you straight to Stockholm syndrome. So apparently apparently there are many people who get that mixed up. I'm not one of them. Rick depicted realistically Terry Gilliam's The Fisher King. That's true. Have you seen The Fisher King?
I have not, no.
It starts out with a zany shock jock.
Who's in that?
Jeff, the guy, and Robin Williams, and
is it about Fisher Broadcasting?
It's not. It's Joni made me watch it at some point. It's like her favorite.
Does he live in a huge building that he can't afford in downtown Seattle?
No. But I didn't catch that for a second. But he's like a New York drive time jock or something, and he lives in some. Blah, blah, blah. For a realistic depiction of your new work environment, the bomb episode of WKRP. I remember that.
Yeah.
With the station evacuated and Johnny and the bomb out of the transmitter, almost as anti-glamorous as Wolfman Jack. I totally remember that. It's where a group called Black Monday, Black Wednesday, something like that, is clearly a play on Black September. A terrorist group is threatening to blow up the radio station. They evacuate the station, but to keep it on the air, they send Johnny to broadcast directly from the transmitter. And you're right, it's like a tool shed out there. I mean, it's like the place where your dad stored the lawnmower and the hedge trimmers. And then it turns out that the bomb is at the transmitter. And then they blow it up, and then it's all very tearful. Otherwise, most media depictions of life in radio are as realistic as Friends, a Pro Tools computerized interior designed beauty with enough space to be a health club, when reality is a dusty closet and a mixer with rotary faders.
We did dust in here.
It's true.
No, it's not dusty in here anymore.
No, it's not so much dust as it is a fungus or some kind of a mildew that fills the air.
What about Private Parts? That was pretty good. He wore headphones.
What about them?
He wore headphones the entire time.
No, you're...
And Robin was in the little booth, which is exactly what we used to have at Fisher.
Private Parts is a pretty accurate depiction of radio. No, that is true. Especially, am I mixing this up in my head? This is probably interesting to nobody, but I don't care. Is this one of those... Am I mixing this up with radio waves where his headphone cord hits the turntable and the needle skips all the way across? I think that's in radio waves.
Mm.
Where Jim Ladd is playing some Zeppelin record and his headphone cable hits the turntable and the screeches all the way across. And Private Parts has that one thing, which for the time was really accurate, where he didn't have computer software to alter his voice, and so he would just play it back on a reel-to-reel, and he would pitch it way down and, like, put his thumb on it to make it sound artificially low. All right, well spotted, Sarah Dillon. All right, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, your prophet, president, seer, and revelator, Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Savage cold temperatures, unrelenting freezing rain, extreme winds and blowing snow is preventing searchers from getting anywhere near the summit of Mount Hood. That's where they traced a cell phone call to one of the three missing climbers who's holed up inside a cave. Weather conditions are forcing them to stay at lower elevations today. That's where they believe the two other climbers may very well be.
And we're going to look for the other two missing climbers, and our resources are going to go to the lower elevations and search what we can and put mass effort into that.
That's Captain Chris, who's in charge of these searchers. Apparently, Frank James, who's related to one of the missing climbers, is encouraged by a cell phone company that has traced his brother's cell phone signal.
If they can get up and use that technology, it's my understanding they can pinpoint, in my brother's case, almost exactly where he is within just a few feet.
Frank, we feel like bothering it.
Yes. But is Pat Garrett going to go look for the other guys as well? What about Billy the Kid? Is he going to help out? And so they're going to pinpoint them using what exactly?
If they can get up and use that technology, it's my understanding they can pinpoint, in my brother's case, almost exactly where he is within just a few feet.
Here's some other technology you may want to invest in. Maybe Google or turning on the television before you do. Or maybe how about a book? Going to the library, determining where you should hike and where you should stay away from.
So he's hiding in a bat cave somewhere. And they're sending up some drones to try to find the other two missing hikers.
Sending up an Imperial droid to... Somebody should make a Hoth reference right now. It would be... I can't really come up with one right now. Now, they're doing this with the brother's cell phone?
Yeah.
Here's a little fun fact, by the way.
But that's only for one person.
Yeah. Well, but
they're not talking about the other two are alive.
Well, presumably the other two are up there, probably in the stomach.
No, they left to get help, and so far they've been very successful, as we can tell.
Hell.
Once you find a cave, stay inside.
They went.
Good enough for bats.
They went to get help, ironically.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just going to make this observation, which is, you see, right here, this is a cell phone. It's a Motorola Q. This is not a paid endorsement or a consideration. I'm just saying, $99 you can get one of these. You can get one of these for $99, and you know what?
That'll get you off Mount Hood.
Here's the thing. Once you have one of these for $99, literally for like an additional, I don't know, $8 a month, you can get a GPS put on this. Tells you exactly where you are at all times, lets you know where you're wandering through. You know, if you decide to do something like climbing up a goddamn sheet of ice 2.5 miles up, you know, just because you feel like killing a weekend, so to speak.
So apparently these people are lost somewhere in the Donner Pass up there. And we don't know what the outcome will be. We think we know, though.
Timothy.
And I'm back to more foolishness in Washington with the Battle Watch.
Here's your Battle Watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
Dead. So let's talk about the way forward, shall we? White House spokesman Tony Snow is characterizing the president's ongoing deliberations on charting a new course for Iraq. In his daily briefing, Snow noted that Bush is seeking input from a wide variety of sources as he contemplates the way forward.
So that you do have the ability to assess from a variety of viewpoints different potential approaches to the conflict, so that you try to anticipate every possible question that goes into it as you formulate the policy.
Well, you know, here's the thing, is that George Bush has already gotten input from Donald Rumsfeld. He's gotten input from the president of Iraq. These are not enough. Clearly, George Bush needs to use the third input.
And who might that be?
Well, I don't know, but a third input, that's a thing that would help George Bush.
You do know that he's not going to listen to anyone.
It is true. I'm just saying
Who can smell impeachment in the air?
I'm just saying, if the first and second inputs don't work, he might wish to try a third input.
I don't think he wishes to try anything.
It smells like... beginning to smell a lot like Nixon.
It does. The president will unveil a new way forward for Iraq in due course.
It'll be interesting because the president will have an opportunity to present it as soon as it's ready. And again, I think Americans do not want a way forward that's not yet complete.
No, Americans do want a way forward now.
Right now.
They wanted it last week. I believe the election in November determined they wanted it back then.
Seriously, George S. Patton once said, General Patton said, a good plan today is better than a perfect plan next week, my friend. So why don't you bring it on? I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know who's in charge of the president's PR right now. I don't know who's in charge of making sure he doesn't look like a nitwit on television. But
they failed miserably on that.
They're asleep at the switch for one thing. And they better not try to put some, and I was telling Lisa this, they better not try to put some images on television, George Bush and his family around a roast beast, sort of Potter style, over the holidays. Well, there's a bunch of guys over there having to eat cockroaches every morning in Iraq and look for their missing limbs. That's going to play even more poorly with the American public than everything has been. The American public not only wants this, as Tim noted, they wanted it months and months ago.
Impeachment. Mr. Snow reportedly stressed the president's careful deliberations in charting a new way forward.
Obviously, the president is determined to make decisions and make them as quickly as possible, but he also wants to make sure that he does it right.
Well, the only people doing it right are these people sending silly string to Iraq. When Mayor Corporation Vice President Stanley Beeler found out of a New Jersey mother's effort to save soldiers in Iraq with silly string, she jumped right in to help. May will be sending 6,000 cans of Silly String, the store's brand, In an effort to help out the war, Beeler said that Silly String helps troops identify tripwires that would otherwise explode and kill our men in Iraq.
It's amazing. It's the perfect way, apparently, to show where the wire is, but not trip it.
It's also an amazing way to show that apparently the government themselves doesn't feel like equipping soldiers with things to prevent them from being blown into tiny pieces. Although I'm sure that's also on the agenda.
That is in the way forward.
That's part of the way forward. That we'll get to see sometime, as they say in management circles, sometime in 07. We're going to plan that forward. And you can, here's the frustrating thing, is you can tell from the way Tony Snow talks about it, the words he uses. People judge Tony Snow by the words he uses. The words you choose tell everything about the president's lawlessness, his deceit, even his impending impeachment. And you can tell that they've got the plan ready. They just don't want it to get lost in the holiday news cycle. So they're just going to wait and unveil it once everything's done. And it's like how radio hosts always take a lot of vacation at the end of the year, around the Christmas time and around, because they figure
they deserve it.
Yes, because they work. They work hard for at least 2 or 3 hours
a day.
They
work hard for the money.
They work hard giggling at pre-prepared jokes and other people's material for a couple hours in the morning. Why don't they deserve a full week off? But they figure that it's the holiday season, people are thinking other things. They'll just leave for a while. And then they'll come back and they'll, give it their all around the first of the year. If you'll notice, most radio programs start to really suck towards the end of the year because they're just phoning it in. They figure that people are distracted by other things.
Not here.
No, not here. We give 110% every day on the Rick Emerson Show. But you can tell that that's what Tony Snow is doing. They've got the plan, but they figure it's not going to get a lot of attention, so they'll just wait and unveil it sometime after the first of the year. As for people who are being blown into so much confetti over in Iraq, they can just wait, apparently. Good God almighty. Let me get... we'll get Mark here in a second. Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Here's your Hoth reference.
Okay.
Your tauntaun will freeze before you reach the first marker.
Well done. Thank you, sir. I knew there was a Hoth reference somewhere that I wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to say about the Dusty radio station.
Yes.
Years and years and years ago when I thought I wanted to be in radio, I got to sit in at 97.1 FM Kiffin with Mike Tanner from 10 to 2. And then they took me downstairs to see Sunny 910, where a guy sat at a desk in a room with no windows, and he had 6 commercial cartridges, but he got to decide which 3 got to be played every 15 minutes.
How exciting for him.
It was awful.
Was that at the... Well, I don't even know where that would have been at that point. How long ago was
it? On Macadam, it was 1991. Somewhere.
I wonder if that wasn't the same building. Tim, do we know?
It may have been.
The same, it might have been.
They didn't have a basement.
And was that... No, I don't think so. And, or
was
they
it downstairs, or it was a closet or something, as I recall.
I don't think they had a basement. They surely would have put us in it had they had one. So was it that made you decide that you did not want to be a DJ?
I did not want to sit in a room reading a book in the dark, more or less, playing with, dialing over at noon to listen to the piped-in news and then dialing back to the almost Muzak and then dialing back over to play a, car wash commercial. It just didn't look like that was something I wanted to do. So I chose to be on the listening end of radio.
It's a lot better now. 2 or 3 things play at once without dialing anything.
Oh, wow. Good time.
And you don't even, and no one even has to be in the studio for that to happen.
Help me to stop at least one. We've learned to handle 2, but 3, that's uncalled for.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.
There you go. Well done. Genius. Oh, good God. And, we have so many people. I hear that story so frequently, a variation on that story about, well, for a while I thought I wanted to be in radio. And then the story, the dream always ends at the same place. Like the first time that they go and they sit in a radio station, they see what it's really like. That's when the dream crumbles into so much dust. All right. And Mark, hello. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, well, I was thinking that if they do happen to find this phone... I was thinking in a grand display, you can go up there and smash the ice cave up. Try to find it.
And I can start a collection of phones that were lost in unfortunate and ill-advised circumstances.
Maybe it's more like a temple of solitude there.
Good day.
Good day to you, sir. Thank you. Do we know that they're in a cave?
One of them is.
How do we know that? Oh, because the guy called me. I'm in a cave.
I'm in the Temple of Solitude.
I'm really getting into myself. If you could just give me a few more hours. He's finding, I don't know where I was going with that. Any man forgets his phone, spends a night in the cave.
Well, the point is, it's their own fault.
really. That is the official stance, by the way, of the AM 970.
They made the decision to go up there. It wasn't a wrong turn. They thought it was the right turn.
It really is true. They did. And
there are no children involved.
No.
So we can do this.
There are no children or animals. Well, not yet. That'll be a few days from now. The thing about it is, and you know that they paid. That's the thing is, you know they paid to fly from Texas for this. Look, they should have just paid a little extra and had the plane fly them directly into the mountain. I mean, that would have been easier and less time consuming.
They should have stayed home for a chili festival. Is there plenty of chili now?
That's so wrong. Stay home and eat some antelope and beat Pauly Shore like everybody else in that state.
You know that I'm sure the city's news anchors on television right now are having similar discussions.
Off the air. And then they're having those discussions like 5 seconds. And Sarah can probably tell you more about this because I haven't spent a lot of time at radio stations or in TV stations. But those conversations, I think, happen at the TV station like 5 seconds before the camera comes
yep.
on.
Yep.
You know?
Yep, profanities and people grumbling, and then it's like, hey, good morning.
Totally.
So you tell that makeup girl, she screws up my eyes again. She's out.
Hello, it's a day of hope, prayers, and courage for three men on top. And you
I've
tell
seen
her,
it.
These croutons are stale. My craft services table is disappointing. And so we are giving our assembled thoughts to those unfortunate men in that ice cave.
Yeah, my eyeliner makes me look like a raccoon.
The best part is when the anchors are in a fight, and then they have to
I
pretend.
Like that.
Yeah, that's really comfortable.
And it's a whole lot of, oh, yeah, that's right.
And then they're, like, yelling at each other and saying, you know, profanities and whatnot at each other, and then they turn to the camera, hello.
Oh, that's
someone.
Fantastic.
It was so awkward.
That's a special kind of tension, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a special kind
yeah,
of tension.
Let's hear more
those.
About it. So what started these fights?
Please, not to be telling us.
I don't really know. Well, it was all the, you know, all the changing around that was happening.
By changing, you mean firing.
Yeah, all the firing and rehiring and shifting and people, like new people coming in, old people being pushed out.
What do you mean I have to get my own coffee coaster?
Yeah, it was just weird. It was really weird.
And there was a lot of robots taking over for everybody there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and the show, when I left it, is 100% different than when I started.
That's what now
it's
I was.
All different people.
I was actually, I was doing a thing last night.
And they
night.
Thought it was a good career move.
I was. The only good career move right now is coming back as a T-1000. That's it. If you can somehow convince them that you're made of metal and have.
And a robot running around teasing people.
Yes. I was some of the Emerson Starship guys, and I hate to use that name, but that's how everybody knows them. The Bigger Than Jesus Band, and we're doing like a thing that I can't really talk about it. I really can't.
We know.
Yeah, that's one of those things.
Yeah, it's one of those things. We all have other activities outside of here.
But anyway, but we were together doing a thing. But one of the guys, this guy Brian, he was like, I haven't really been following, but what's up with Coin? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, like, there was a group of people, and then I stopped watching for a while, and now it's a whole new group of people, but no one ever mentions it. And I had no answer, because I haven't watched it, I haven't watched it since you left.
Yeah.
But there's nobody left there that's original. It's a totally different group, right?
Well, we know it's still in the basement, so maybe they store lawnmowers and gardening equipment down there now.
It's possible.
Well, perhaps, you know, we got bought out by a bigger company when I was there, and then perhaps higher-ups started hiring their friends to replace other people.
And by perhaps, you mean that is what happened.
Perhaps.
Well done.
Yeah.
Here's Tim Riley. Well, anyway, Dick Cheney recently paid a visit to his good friend, Saudi Arabia King Abdullah, who told him he's going to start financing our enemies if we don't get out of Iraq soon.
Just so you know.
With big wads of cash, and it'll all be shown on television. Apparently, Dick Cheney went there to tell him what we're going to do, and the Saudi king says, no, if you do that, we're going to finance your enemies. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Just giving you a heads up on this, Dick. This is something you may want to have on your radar.
But I still consider the Bushies members of my family.
All right.
Tapper, snuff watch.
Here's your snuff watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Television X. director and renowned film performer, Peter Boyle, will best be remembered for the laughs he brought to the American people.
Is this what I think it is?
I'm not sure.
Fantastic. Oh, you want to talk about... Now, I'm just going to set this clip up a little bit.
Yeah.
We're doing this Leno style. You need to set this clip up. Here, I'm going to set up this clip. Young Frankenstein is a landmark of American comedic cinema. It really is. And the sequence that everybody remembers from Young Frankenstein is the sequence we're about to play. And everybody knows what it is if you're familiar with that film at all. You want to talk about something that... I almost lost control of my functions the first time I saw this film because it just comes out of the blue. And I can't even imagine how hilarious it was in like 74, 71, whenever this came out. So this is Peter Boyle and Gene Wilder from Young Frankenstein.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes or cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dress up like a $1 million. Try mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper.
Cooper, Cooper!
Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their mitts.
And that's how I best like to be remembered.
Right there. And then, there you go, $100 million box office right there. Oh, God, really, and it is true. Mel Brooks, that is Mel Brooks' enduring gift to us, is jokes about flatulence and the sound of someone who is severely retarded trying to sing a pop song. And really, from that comedic acorn, the mighty oak of everything we do on this program, every time you play the kids of Whitney High or Bobby Swindell, or what's his name from Corky? The Life Goes On, the Corky guy, when he does that. What is that song? What was his? Is it Poison? Poison Ivy?
No, it was Pizza. It's all about Pizza. No,
but he did a cover of Poison Ivy, too, the pop song from the 60s. Who did the song Poison Ivy, Tim?
The Coasters.
Poison Ivy, yeah, by the Coasters. He did a cover of Poison Ivy by the Coasters. And then...
I can't remember his real name. I keep thinking of his name on
it's
the show.
It's Chris something, isn't it?
Oh, Chris...
Chris...
Crap, I can't remember.
Every time you hear us do any of that humor, though...
Chris Burke.
If you're blue and you don't know where to
from
go
Mel Brooks.
To,
it
why
all
don't
came
you
from
go
this moment.
Where fashion sits?
That never gets old. At least not to me, and that's what matters.
Peter Boyle has passed away. He was 71 years old. He had multiple myeloma and heart disease, and he died at New York's Criterion Hospital. He was also in Everybody's Loves Raymond and also had roles in movies like Taxi Driver.
He wasn't the guy that's going to kill his wife. That was Scorsese himself. I've heard, what the hell did he do in Taxi Driver? I haven't seen Taxi Driver.
He also played a foul-mouth bigot in the 1970 film Joe.
Joe was a very intense film, and then he played a racist cop in Malcolm X. He was in The Brinks Job, I think, with Peter Falk. I have never seen in my life an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond.
I haven't either.
Sarah?
Mm-mm.
No, see that there's. I was.
No, it's too screechy.
I have never in, and I'm not. I don't see that as some. You know, not like
nope.
I'm not like I'm better than other folks. I'm just saying, I have never in my life seen an episode. You know something else I've never seen? I have never seen an episode of King of Queens.
Nope.
God, what else? Sitcoms are a thing I just quit watching at some point. I think when I reach the age of reason, that's a form of comedy with a rare exception, something like Sports Night being an exception. I think I just, the sitcom section of my brain just withered away and atrophied into non-existence. So, anyway, he was apparently in Everybody Loves Raymond, but to us, he's a big singing, dancing, tap dancing mongoloid.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Peter Boyle, dead. Rick, since Texas is sending us people who want to climb Mount Hood during the worst time of the year, perhaps we can send some of our coastal kite flyers down there during tornado season. Just a thought.
Also, Rick, I believe the reference you're looking for is from Empire Strikes Back, when R2 and 3PO are standing together looking out of the hangar, and 3PO says, R2 says the chances of survival is 735-1. Perhaps someone should have told them these odds. Benjamin from Southeast, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, we're often asked, what constitutes Jewish humor? We can all find out in the 25th anniversary edition of the Big Book of Jewish Humor by Bill Novak.
Three men are walking in the desert. The German says, I'm tired and thirsty, I must have a beer. The Italian says, I'm tired and thirsty, I must have wine. And the Jew says, I'm tired and thirsty, I must have diabetes.
Yes, this book combines stories, cartoons, and some of the best Jewish humor around.
It does make fun of people, but they tend to be wealthy or powerful.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Anyway, this is a good time to break. It's 503-733-2970. 503.
They still haven't found people lost on the mountain. Join us next spring.
We should totally do that.
We'll save it for a sweep sweep.
Get the Marty up there.
Yeah, totally.
Make wireless mic. Get a remote happening up there. Fantastic. If only I were
like a scavenger hunt.
Desperately poor and snow covered. Fantastic. I sense a strong future for your promotions, Tim.
It's a station that cares. We're part of the home team. It's part of what makes the Northwest such a special place to live.
Back after this, the Ministry of Truth continues next. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. 503-733-2970. I was telling Tim, somebody sent me the greatest thing, and this is probably the first time Sarah's ever been exposed to this. This is the Geraldo Rivera Al Capone thing.
Oh, I've never heard it.
Well, see, I haven't watched it yet. They haven't sent... They couldn't find the original opening of Al Capone's Vault, but they sent me on YouTube, so a little Geraldo Rivera retrospective, where he looks back in retrospect. I guess that's redundant. The point is, it's a thing where he recaps what it was like, blah, blah, blah. So we'll play that here in a little while. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So Fox has finalized its New Year's Eve broadcast. So everyone has to have a New Year's Eve show, I guess Fox has decided that Cat Deeley, whoever he is, will host up Fox's reality competition, So You Think You Can Dance. He'll be in front of the crowd in Times Square. Also performing on Fox's New Year's Eve show will be Toni Braxton. Oh, boy.
Toni Braxton.
Toni Braxton. Wow. I know she's still sang.
I didn't know she would. How far into the book do you have to get before she's what they're offering you? That's like when you get that radio TV interview report, that big newsprinty guest directory, and it's like getting to the bottom. It's like interview guy who did Mickey Dolenz's hair.
And American Idol finalist Chris Doherty. And that's their New Year's Eve
for who?
Program.
For what network?
Fox, FOX.
And it's hosted by...
Thank you. Cat Deeley.
And that's who? Sarah?
I don't know.
I don't know. I thought maybe he was mispronouncing Carson Daly, but it's Cat Deeley.
Cat Deeley.
We're all just falling so out of touch here. All right, well, there you go.
Apparently, they under at a local Holiday Inn from the piano bar.
Seriously. They really... That's a thing. They ought to do that. They ought to get... One of those networks ought to get, like, a full-on lounge singing act. And not like a hokey... I mean, you know, we love Richard Cheese, but not a guy like that is sort of putting it on. They ought to go and dig up an actual lounge singer from somewhere, like a Ramada Inn, somewhere in Decatur. And that ought to be... they ought to throw it to them and have them do the music and all the interstitial segments on a new... I'd watch that. Make it like an authentically... Because so many times these things are supposed to be good, but then they're just sort of inadvertently bad. Just get a guy that's really actually bad and have him do it.
All right. Well done. Attention, Scotty, and our other friends who desire suburban cuisine. The company that owns Red Lobster and the Olive Garden is removing all trans fats from its menus, taking the fun out of eating. They're going to introduce new canola oils in more than 1,200 restaurants in North America. This is the latest company that says it'll make the switch from frying oils, which clog up the arteries and make people fat. Wendy's International, Yum Brands, and Panera Bread Company have already made the switch and have announced plans to do so. This announcement comes 1 week after New York City banned most artificial trans fats from restaurants.
And they still got that the taco.
But if you want old school, out of requiring fat, there's still McDonald's.
Well, that's now just, did McDonald's have, they have the other
fat?
They have
plenty of things to kill you, yes. Why not stop by and get a bag full? Bring some home for the kids.
How long do you really want to live anyway? You know, the thing about Wendy's, Wendy's has got fantastic chili. That's
oh,
Wendy's
yeah.
Chili.
But then, of course, there's that rumor about the thing, you know, that person who...
Yeah, but that was crap.
But it
yeah.
doesn't come with every order.
No, that's your...
You have to ask for it specially at the drive-up.
It's sort of that's sort of a reverse golden ticket. Yeah, and that was it. She found that finger somewhere else anyway. It was like, didn't it turn out it was like her husband, like some co-worker lost it in like...
It's Taco Bell where the customers get groped at the drive-up.
When
we were reading that the other day.
When they're not having when they're not having uncontrollable bowel movements.
Yes.
When they're not turning their whole minivan into a port-a-john. I'd like another seven-layer... You know, it's just a whole lot of... And I read the greatest... And by greatest, I mean a story that we are following with much concern at the Rick Emerson Show. A Day of Courage and Prayer. As they now they've saying that it's not even the onions. They can't... So great, unless you're Taco Bell. They can't even figure out where the E. coli is coming from now. Because they've discerned that I think this morning, I think CNN, I think Roop is talking about this. Taco Bell. We'll talk more about this with Jim Roop at 1 o'clock. He's going to talk to us a little bit about Peter Boyle passing. Boyle passing is an unpleasant phrase, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. Todd Gorger. I'm doing some Boyle passing. The Centers for Disease Control say onions probably didn't cause the E. coli outbreak. Linked to Taco Bell is that a fast food chain launches a media campaign to persuade customers its food is safe. You know that that's when you're really starting from ground zero. You know what I mean? They're not even able to convince people the food tastes good. They haven't even worked to that stage. Now they're just at our food is safe. That's like when, what was it, Delta Airlines or somebody a while back, their slogan was like, we get you there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, you'll have a good flight, you'll enjoy it, it'll be pleasant. It was, we get you there, shut your hole.
Speaking of that, I mean, the state of Oregon in the past week has been nothing but bad publicity for everyone.
Oregon will kill you dead.
Now, Washington federal officials are looking into an outbreak of novovirus that has sickened 8 people in Oregon. The FDA says 8 were sickened after eating oysters at a private event. Authorities traced the virus to raw frozen oysters on the half shell.
Oh.
Now, these aren't all American oysters. They're from South Korea. The company recalled more than 1,000 cans of these oysters November 27th, but not everybody listened. They were already open in Oregon and ready to go to a private party.
Opened. Where are those oysters? I don't know. They already open. You send them to Oregon. They eat anything.
Federal authorities say the Center for Disease Control is insisting upon an investigation.
These oysters go bad. No matter. We be far away by the time diarrhea hit. We in another time zone.
So blame these on the South Koreans.
There's so much in that story to work with. Raw frozen oysters. Why would you... How do you even know... None of us here eat oysters. Am I right? Correct?
I think you're correct in that assumption.
Right. Yeah. I can eat any seafood that tastes really fishy and chewy and stuff.
Anything that doesn't come in a fried stick.
Exactly.
Oysters just seem like a revolting food.
They do.
They seem...
so gray and gummy, and you're supposed to swallow them. Eat something you can't chew?
All the things in the world to eat, why must one eat oysters?
And mussels.
Really?
Oh, that's even better. I can't even eat them because... I just can't eat them because of the name. I'm like eating a muscle. It's just weird. It just sounds strange. It's like, have a ligament. No.
I bet it's something the French came up
with. Let's just call it what it is. It's like eating a bowl of mucus. I mean, that's what oysters look like. I've never had one. I've never eaten one. Barbecue.
It's a delicacy in some circles.
Yeah, but when
it's never worth it because everyone who eats them just swallows them like, ooh, that was good. You don't even taste it. You just swallow it. Okay, Rick, I hate you.
Why do you hate me?
I just like, I'm not talking.
Why? I don't understand.
I'm not talking anymore.
No, but I mean.
I'm not talking to you.
I don't understand.
I'm not talking.
When you say you swallow it, you don't even taste it.
This is big. I'm not going to blow this one. Real funny guy.
No, but.
Doesn't seem like there's not a point, though.
It does. And can I speak for all of us here when I say that things that are marketed as delicacies are usually bad?
It don't taste good.
Foods that are marketed as delicacies are usually not good.
Let's or at like least nails and
They're not. Right. They are not disproportionately good anyway. Right. Like I have had caviar and it was just sort of a take it or leave it.
I mean, if somebody said slugs are delicacies, people would be gobbling them down at big parties somewhere.
It just doesn't make any sense at all. And oysters just seem bad. And then if they're from. No offense, South Korea. Anytime a perishable food has been trucked in from a different hemisphere, I'm a little skeptical. Especially because we live, next to a goddamned ocean. So the fact that we have to get them from South Korea, I don't know if we're some sort of like, if we're like a dollar store where South Korea is dumping all of their seafood. Anyway, so there you go. Bad is what it is. So don't do that. Yes, Oregon will kill you dead. Don't eat anything here. Oregon kills people dead. Here's Tim Riley.
World of Women. The best bra fitter in the country.
Oh, my.
The best bra fitter in the country is now sharing her secrets. Rebecca Aspin, who outfitted much of the cast in Sex and the City, is releasing a new book entitled The Lingerie Handbook. She says if women want to feel good on the outside, they need to put on something snug on the inside.
What do you mean put on something snug on the inside?
You have to read the book, apparently.
Okay.
It's like an internal smile. Like when you're wearing silk underwear, you walk differently. You project yourself in a different way. Lingerie is like the foundation for our outerwear. I don't understand why 85% of the women out there are wearing the wrong size.
I don't understand why men don't find me attractive anymore. Where are you going? I'm sexy.
Get me another camel without the filter.
I'm starving. When is the buffet coming? Am I the only one who finds the phrase, it's like an internal smile, to be a little discombobulated?
It's like an internal smile.
Okay. What is?
She's speaking of undergarments.
What is that phrase? You need something inside with a snug fit?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Miss Aspin says there are many excuses why women don't wear nice undergarments.
They do not pay enough attention to it. They'll spend $7,000 on a Chanel suit, but they'll come in wearing ripped underwear and bras that are ill-fitting. And I ask, how could you do that? And they say, who's going to see it?
Get me a Newport. Jesus Christ. Can you imagine? What? Never mind. What must that woman sound like when she's having relations of some kind? It'd be like having sex with a member of the Hutt family.
Who comes in ripped underwear?
I
apparently
don't know.
People that she knows.
I guess. Whatever. I mean, well, never mind. Go ahead.
Rebecca, what is the best way to find a bra that fits?
Lingerie bra!
Go to your local lingerie store or a very good department store and give yourself over to the lingerie specialist.
Give yourself
over.
God. Here I am. Take me.
Go to your local lingerie store or a very good department store and give yourself over to the lingerie specialist.
Jesus Christ.
And give about an hour and try on a whole bunch of different types of bras.
Let them molest you.
An hour? An hour to find a bra?
Seriously. I understand.
That's a lot of hooking and unhooking and somebody like cupping you to see if it has the proper fit. That's creepy.
It really is. And I understand that not all bras fit the same. Just like, like these jeans I'm wearing. You know what? I wear, whatever size jeans, like 31, 32, whatever it is. And it's not always.
34.
It's not a 30. You take it back right now.
You can't possibly be a 31.
You're not a 31.
I am a 31.
I am a 31 waist. Absolutely. How much do you want to bet me?
If Tim Riley's a 31 and you're claiming to be a 31, I'll bet you the world.
I will tell you this. I won't vouch for these jeans I'm wearing right now, but I will tell you this. The jeans I wore yesterday.
Well, sir, and I have a pair of pants that say I'm a size 2. I mean, everything fluctuates. It doesn't mean you're a size 31.
Why would they say 31 if they're not a 31? Is that to make me feel
better? It's an ego stroker. See, look, you're bragging about it right now. It worked.
I wasn't bragging about it. I was just saying I'm a 31, whatever, and you interjected with, you're not a 30, you're 34.
Tim Riley said that he's a 31.
I have a girlish waist. I have a woman's hands. I have a large gut, but I have a girlish waist.
Let's return to our women's segment, shall we?
Okay, no, my point is, I know that bras sometimes fit differently. Just like a pair of pants that is whatever waist, whatever your waist might be.
31.
In my case, a 31.
You and Tim should share clothes.
Very.
He's a bit taller than
we're like sisters. Varies. But why It shouldn't take you an... If it takes you an hour to find a bra, there's something wrong with your breasts. They're growing or fluctuating or bobbling around like
toxic
glue.
Well, there's different kinds of bras, but I really don't think it would take an hour.
But there aren't different kinds of look, you're... I mean... when you say different kinds of bras, there's, as I understand it, not to have a whole bra discussion, but I mean, there's the front hook, the bat hook, back hook, the bat hook. Quick, Robin! There's the back hook, and then there's whatever.
There's lacy,
your cotton,
there's body.
There's your lace, there's your sports bra.
There's like the water bra, there's...
But I mean, size is a size.
No, it fluctuates with brand.
Well, okay, but whatever. I'm just saying it shouldn't take you an hour to find a bra.
I'm agreeing. Why are we still talking?
Because this woman is apparently hanging out with a bunch of women who want to be groped for an hour and walk in with ripped underwear.
Well, let's find the way forward in this.
Let's find a new direction with this bra.
From bras we go to other unmentionables. Rebecca, how might one avoid a visible panty line?
A thong will never, ever show lines. And I know a lot of people have a stigma against the thong because they think it's going to ride up their derrieres or hurt them. But I say the right style of thong on your body for a half an hour, and you will be a thong convert.
That is a lie, because I see skanky girls in, like, tight skirts and stuff, and you can see the triangle at the top of their butt crack where they can see their thong. And it's really trashy.
Who thinks the thong is going to hurt them? I mean, I understand maybe there's things that aren't the most comfortable, but if your thong hurts you,
get thee
to a proctologist.
One might be exhausted from looking at bras for an hour before they get to the thong.
This one is fascinating, and just heard you...
Go to your local lingerie store or a very good department store and give yourself over to the lingerie specialist.
All right. I'm not going
to
do it.
Then after it's done, you're ready to go see Wayne Newton.
Seriously.
Does she have any tips on how to try on underwear? Like how you can find your proper size?
That might be next hour.
Is that difficult?
No.
Well, I don't know.
Does she say it takes an hour to pick out a bra?
Oh, no, that finding a goddamn brassiere was this difficult. And I'm not going to do the whole monologue about guys don't care that your bra and panties match or whatever, because I understand... Joni really did set me straight on with this. Joni DeRoshi had a phrase that really is completely accurate. She said something that I had never heard crystallized quite this perfectly. And it was one of those things you hear and you instinctively know that it's true. And she said, in her assessment, she said that 90% of a woman's libido or whatever is predicated on how she feels about herself, not about how the guy feels about her. And I think that's probably true. She said that, and I instinctively was like, that explains so much. Like, suddenly, so much of my life became clear. That, because you guys are like, baby, I don't care if your bra and panties match. You just, wear burlap. I don't care. You know, but it's important to women and whatever. So that's the thing. But all of that stuff is stuff that guys don't care about. But seriously,
we talked 20 minutes on so far.
But not even we care about it as much as Sally Struthers does here. So, I mean, it's just insane.
That's Sally Struthers.
It's not, but that's the best I can know. Who does she sound like? Lauren Bacall, maybe, after she was dead?
Penny Marshall?
Maybe.
Marge Simpson's relatives.
Go to your local lingerie store or a very good department store and give yourself over to the lingerie set.
Troy McClure and I are going to the movies tonight.
It's Tim Riley. Well, the experts with the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology says several foods and decorations will make this holiday season miserable for you.
In a lot of cases, the symptoms have occurred related to exposures to mold spores, dust mites, which are common indoor year-round allergens, and this can be related to improper storage of tree ornaments
or
trees themselves, particularly when they've been stored in damp areas such as basements.
Sarah's scratching herself right now. Fantastic.
My shoulder.
I really wish we had just gone to that guy and just had a bunch of wheezing and hacking. And Jerry, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
What's up, brother?
I had a random thought about the woman saying, you know, about women coming in with ripped underwear and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's probably the reason why a lot of times guys can't score.
What? I don't understand.
Okay, simple. Guys, we really don't care about underwear, right?
Right.
Okay, but if we start to think like the opponent, okay, now if their underwear is perfect and it matches,
like
then they won't have so much.
I sense a lot of good relationships in your future.
Huh?
No, then go ahead, sir.
No, that was my deep thought for the day.
Thanks for sharing that
That's
with us.
That's about as deep as I go.
Okay, and we're done. Thank you. And we're done. Scotty, take line two. Great call. Thank you, Scotty.
You trust his judgment.
Well spotted. Scotty does note that that woman sounds like Maud, though, and I could totally see
go
that.
To your local lingerie store or a very good.
I'm too old to have a baby. It's Jim Riley.
Well, Angelina Jolie would like to have a private meeting with Jennifer Aniston at the earliest possible convenience.
Oh, I'd like to watch that.
To reassure the former Friends star, her relationship with Brad Pitt didn't start until after their marriage faltered. Jolie said she and Pitt formed a strong platonic friendship on the set of Mr. and Mrs. Jones in 2004. Does anybody remember that movie?
No. Mrs. Smith?
Oh, yes, Mr.
Oh,
Mrs.
that
Smith.
Was a secret agent.
Yeah. And became a pair, like socks. The Oscar winner insists she was busy bringing up her adopted son, Maddox, and it was clear to her during the filming that Pitt was with his best friend, someone he loves and respects, unquote. However, Pitt and Aniston split in January 2005, and the actor was photographed holidaying with Jolie in Kenya in May 2005, confirming long-held media speculation they were an item. Jolie briefly met Aniston on the set of the action comedy, but insists it wasn't a proper meeting. We've, passed each other and said hi, shook hands. It was not a real sit-down meeting.
See, this is what I don't understand. I don't understand the, this is the sort of thing that makes me hate celebrities, where Angelina Jolie, rather than just calling Jennifer Aniston, whose number you know she has, goes in the present. I'd love to talk to Jennifer Aniston. Tell her I didn't steal. Just pick up the goddamn phone.
You can tell next will be an appearance on Larry King.
Totally. It's like, leave me out of it. I don't care. Rick, what that woman said was, quote, to feel good on the outside, you need something snug on the inside. That's the phrase I was looking for with what that woman said about the... All right, here's Tim Ryan.
Well, she'll be back later with more.
Fantastic.
And we'll have more foods to ruin your holidays.
I can't wait.
All right. The State Board of Education in Georgia will decide today whether to keep Harry Potter books on library shelves in one suburban Atlanta school district, and the matter will be discussed in public rather than behind closed doors, as previously planned. The board will consider an appeal by parent Laura Mallory, who is upset that the county school board voted to keep the best-selling books in school, despite her claims the books indoctrinate children in pagan religions. It is only appropriate to discuss the subject in public, said Holly Mannheimer, executive director of Georgia's First Amendment Foundation. This is just the kind of issue in which the Open Meetings Act exists to enable the public to have oversight in these very important policy-making decisions involving our children.
All right.
County school officials have said the books are good tools for encouraging kids to read and spark creativity and imagination. Officials have considered banning all books with references to witchcraft, which would mean mainstays like Macbeth and Cinderella would have to go.
All right. Just the weird crap that they had us read. Like, I remember they had us read Bridge to Terabithia when I was in school, which I think is being made into some god-awful, sure-to-be-terrible Disney film now, which is, that's a creepy book. Joe, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, I just wanted to tell you about oysters. Oysters are, have you ever eaten a raw egg?
No, why would I do that?
Well,
because there were no oysters around.
The one time I tried oysters, I was camping, and this dude and his wife and family were all sitting at this picnic table, and he pulls out this jar of oysters, raw oysters, and just starts
out of his knapsack that he's been lugging across country in the sun for 3 or 4 months.
So he's like, "Hey man, you ought to try these oysters are really good." I'm like, "Dude, but he finally conned me into it. So he gives me like 3 raw oysters, and he's like, "Just gulp them down and swallow them, man. That's the only way to eat these."
You're
things.
Sure these were oysters, right? There weren't any hairs in them?
No, these were oysters. It said so right on the jar. So yeah. I get these oysters in my mouth, and I try to swallow, and they start coming back up. They're slimy, like.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah.
So
I wasn't sure. Not
oh,
sure
I was sure. I heard
it. Yeah. Would that go, Sarah?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
So anyway, I take a drink. I'm trying to swallow them, and I take a drink of the of my coffee to try to keep from puking. And instead, what I end up doing is spewing bits of raw oyster and coffee over him and his entire family.
Ew.
Okay, it was almost worth it to get to be in there. All right, thank you, Joe.
Yeah, I know. You broke me up in the middle of it. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. Thank you. And we're done. There was some discussion there about whether Joe had used a word that we deemed unsuitable for broadcast. We were better to err on the side of caution.
Yes, I believe that. might have been uttered.
Yeah, all right. We should break here. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Sort of one big living room for all of Portland. 503-733-2970. We'll come back. Jim Roop talks about the passing of Peter Boyle and what it might do to you if you eat a Taco Bell today. Welcome to the lunch hour. Later on, Tracy Guns will give away a couple pairs of tickets to see LA Guns tomorrow at Outlaws. You stay there for the Rick Emerson radio program.